Accession number 28709, Reel 6.
Right, this is Bunty Lawson, Reel 6.
Okay, now to go back, track back a bit to V-Day, when I was working in London, and I think I said before that that was the only humane watch system that we did, each watch for 2 days running, and I'd done my two night duties, so I had 2 days off, where I had gone to my parents in Sandhurst. And the day I was going back up to London to go back on duty again, peace broke out. And I said, oh, goody, goody, now they won't want me. And then conscience smote me. My mother, as usual, said, well, it's entirely up to you, darling. And I said, well, this is a bit unfair, because whoever has been on duty can't get away until I take over. So I went into Camberley and I caught a train up to Waterloo. The train was packed, and there were three, four very young-looking pilots with very new-looking silver wings, which are obviously frightfully newly acquired, jammed into the same corridor that I was. And they had come from Black Bush. And we were all jammed in together, so they said, you know, what was I doing? By this time, I was sporting a couple of medal ribbons, so I'd obviously been in a great deal longer than they had. And but no wigs. Not that you could see anyway. And it suddenly occurred to me, we were all laughing and talking together, what about, I have no idea. But it suddenly occurred to me that unless they were sent out to the Far East, those four young men had suddenly been given a future. That if it had been a couple of years or even a year before, they would not have had. No idea who they were, anyway. We made great promises that when I came off duty at 8 o'clock that night, I would meet them in the Savoy Bar. Went on duty, well, and I went home to my flat to freshen up a bit. Caught a bus up, and I should think probably walked down from to walk down Whitehall. And King Charles Street, where I worked, is directly parallel to Downing Street. And it seemed to me that the whole of London was packed into Whitehall, trying to get into Downing Street to see Churchill, who was the man of the moment, obviously. And I simply couldn't get through the crowd to get down King Charles Street. And then I spied a mounted policeman, and I managed to get as far as him. And I said, I'm going on duty. Can you clear me a way through to get into King Charles Street? And he said, are you frightened of horses? Well, little do I mean, how did the poor man know that I was half a horse? I'd been brought up with the things. So I said, no, I am not. And for an awful moment, I thought he was going to suggest that in a tight WAF skirt, uniform skirt, he was going to offer me a lift behind or in front of his horse. And he said, will you hold on to my stirrup leather? So I said, certainly. And he parted the crowd like parting the Red Sea, with a lot of mind your backs, please, and the threat of being trodden on by a horse. He delivered me to the door of my office, where I bade him a fond farewell and got on duty. Was something which we had never been allowed to do before. We were told that Churchill was coming back to Downing Street, having had a short service, I think, in Westminster Abbey, and we were to be allowed up onto the Air Ministry roof to see him return. And so up we went, and we had a marvellous view. He was in an open car, sitting on the back window ledge, well, hood ledge, because the hood was open, looking rather like Humpty Dumpty, and at one point he fell off. I doubt if he was sober, and I don't blame him if he wasn't. Anyway, we had a very good view of Churchill returning to Downing Street. Then we finished our watch, and the next lot came on, I suppose, at 8. And I went out of the Ministry, and there were still crowds in Whitehall, and I thought, no way would I ever be able to get up as far as the Savoy Grill. So I thought, well, they've no idea what I look like, and they don't even know my name at this time. So with another girl called Annette Bersenkert, who'd come off duty the same time as me, and we were just swept up into the crowds. We ended up with the other millions in front of Buckingham Palace. I don't remember ever managing to get into a pub, but I think we were all as high as kites, whether it was atmosphere, because I can't actually remember having a drink. But we sang God Save the King. The royal family kept coming out onto the balcony. We all cheered, and then everybody was dancing and singing. It was really quite crazy. And I've forgotten what small hours of the morning. We were nearly dropping. We were so tired. And Annette said, I don't like the thought of you walking up the King's Road, where I still had my Chelsea Cloisters bed set. I think you better come back and spend what remains of the night. She was sharing a flat with her father. Her parents were separated. And she said, all I can offer you is to sleep on the sofa. And I said, anywhere where I take my shoes off and put my feet up, it's going to be heaven. So we tottered back to her rather posh block of flats in the beginning bit of Chelsea. And she gave me a couple of pillows and a blanket, where I threw myself onto the sofa and blacked out completely. The first thing I knew was her father, who gently took back the blanket off my face and said, do I know you? Oh, no, I don't. And put the blanket back on again. And the rest is history.
But VJ Day was nothing in comparison to
No, Ian and I were up in London together and with friends, but it wasn't anything like the relief. In fact, the bit between BE Day, oh, am I still on? And VJ Day was quite busy because all our ciphers were about the build-up of the forces in the Far East. I think it was known as Tiger Force. I could be wrong in that. But it was very much Mountbatten's sphere of influence then.
So the work you were doing at this point, the technical aspect of it was the same as you'd been doing in Italy? And
the same I was doing on the station, on any RAF station, but in a bigger way. And the routing and recognition of the routing of signals had always been done by the civil service. I can't think why. They had an office literally with a hatch between the cipher office and their office, and they held all the book part of where what units held what ciphers. And practically all the cipher work there was on my Bete Noire, the Type X machine. But I was quite useful because when the civil servants had to hand us their reference books of who held what ciphers, being the civil service, of course, it had to be booked out from their office into somebody else's central office and then reissued to us, which all took quite a time. But they wouldn't just push them through the hatch for us to look at, would they? No. They obeyed the letter of the law. But thankfully, I had been to so many different stations that I had most of it in my head. So I knew if it was a signal going to RAF delegation Washington and, say, 30 Mission Moscow, an air attaché in the States. And I knew one of our ciphers would be common to the three others, so they could all just have the one enciphered message sent, and they could decipher it. So late in the war, I was moderately useful. But once the books were reissued to us, even that had packed in, and I had two, so it didn't matter.
Before
the war, my husband worked for de Havilland's in the design office. And as such, he was reserved occupation, which he ignored and joined up anyway. Well, he was in the RAFVR, and he wasn't terribly keen on going back to the De Havillands. Not that he disliked them in any way, he didn't. But he had missed 6 years, and the people who had used their reserved occupation, they'd have got 6 years ahead of him. So he would be going right back as a junior at 6 years too late. So I can't remember whether he suggested it or whether I did, that he applied for a permanent commission. Anyway, he was granted one straight away by Air Marshal Sir Jack Slessor, who he'd worked for in Italy. So there's no trouble after that. So my travelling life really didn't finish there, because we moved every 2 or 3 years. Posting of note was that in the late 1950s, he was given command of 216 Squadron, which had issued with Comets, which were the first jet transport. That was a bit hairy, because the De Havillands were building the Comet 4, which was the stretch version of the Comet 1. We had the Comet 2 when the others all blew up. Well, they all blew up, but they had the three, I think it was three bad depressurization crashes. And they were all the 216 Squadron pilots, which are a pain of grief to damage any of these aircraft, because they've got to have an impeccable history, this lot, so we can sell the Comet 4. And fortunately, nothing ever did happen to them. From there, in 1962, we went out to Aden. He was promoted Air Commodore and went out to Aden. So we were there at the beginning of the troubles there. I think they only threw about 6 hand grenades at it the first year, and rather more the second.
They all missed.
They missed, yes. Well, just literally the day we left, which was the most unpredictable thing, because Arabs on the whole are very fond of children. And they actually threw a hand grenade at the end of a teenage barbecue and party. And they killed the SMO's eldest daughter, a girl of 15, 16, I suppose, who was my daughter's best friend. And for 2 years, they'd gone to all their teenage parties together. And we were actually flying home that day. And I always had this almost guilty feeling, but there but for the grace of God. But we arrived back, and then we went to Lincolnshire. And from... No, we didn't. Aden, we went to Lincolnshire. Lincolnshire, where he was commandant at Cranwell, we went back up to London, where I got 2 part-time jobs. I had to sell my horse when we left Lincolnshire, but that upset me a bit. And I'm not terribly domesticated. I like something outside my four walls. So I got 2 part-time jobs in 2 different antique shops. I'd always wanted to run my own antique business when we retired. I learned 2 extremely good lessons there. One was how little I in actual fact knew. I got quite a good eye, but I had no depth of knowledge whatsoever. And the other was that I didn't have enough capital to set up. And that was about the last really useful lesson I learned, I think. Anyway, after his last posting there, and then he was virtually headhunted by the British Aircraft Corporation. And then, given the chance of being on the sales side of Concorde, and that he couldn't turn down. So he went worldwide on Concorde, and I didn't. I put roots down for the first time in my life. And that's it. Now I just sit here reminiscing.
Well, I'm jolly glad you do. So thank you very much for speaking to us.
You're welcome, dear. You're welcome.